All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, United States Army CW-2 type helicopter pilot, 1967 to 1971. We want to welcome you to our program today. We've got a lot of exciting things to talk about. We're going to be talking about the VA mainly. And by the VA, I don't just mean the hospital. I just got into this discussion a little bit earlier. We're going to be talking about all of the benefits that you may be entitled to. It doesn't mean just not the health care, but housing, disability benefits, grants to remodel your home, all kinds of things that are available to you today. So if you want to get in on a conversation, I want you to give us a call. Write this down. Grab your pencil and write this down, 734-822-1600, or toll free is 844-838-1600. We've got some representatives here that we're going to be introducing in just a little bit. I'm going to have a partner in the legal law firm of Legal Help for Veterans is going to be on the program. We've got our local county veteran service officer is going to be here to answer your questions if you have any. And we're going to be presenting some new things that have occurred with the Veterans Administration over the last couple of months and actually over the last week. So make sure that you pay attention. At the bottom of the hour, we've got another gentleman, Dr. Mann, who has worked at the VA for a number of years. He's got some concerns about the VA. So, again, you may find it interesting. I got two quick announcements for you. There are two big events that are coming up in our local area. And number one, of course, is the Thunder over Michigan, and that's next weekend. All Labor Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and the Blue Angels are going to be there. This is their only performance in Michigan this year, so make sure you get out there. It's going to run all 3 days. There's a lot of different types of aircraft. There are static airplane displays. There are going to be parachute jumps. There's going to be big airplanes, little airplanes, acrobatic airplanes. You got to go and see this. This is a great event. The tickets are $35 for adults. Kids 15 and under are free. Get them out there to see this. They won't believe it. If you want more information, you can go to the Thunder Over Michigan website, or you can go to YankeeAirMuseum.org. That's YankeeAirMuseum.org. Don't miss it. We will be out there wandering around, probably not on the airfield, but they don't like it when you do that. So we'll be out there. I hope we'll catch up with you at that. So that's next weekend, Thunder over Michigan. Don't miss it. The other thing that's a little bit closer to my heart right now, of course, is the Washtenaw County VVA Chapter 310 annual pig roast is coming up. So after next weekend, when you go to Thunder over Michigan, the following weekend, that's following Sunday, actually, September 10th from noon to 4 o'clock, is our annual pig roast to raise money. And we do, runs from noon till 4 p.m. It's $10. All of the barbecue beef that you can eat and a lot of other things that will be provided. There'll be music. There are static displays there. We've got a helicopter, a tank, some artillery, and some other things out there. So make sure you bring the kids. This is an opportunity to hear, talk to your local veterans. And they've got stories that are just curl a hair on your head. You wouldn't believe it, what they can talk about there. So what we do with the funds that we raise on this is that we care for our county veterans memorial. We also have parties for hospitals veterans, hospitalized veterans at our local VA, Thanksgiving dinner for the Dawn Farm residents, and much, much more. And it's really just an opportunity for us to give back to the community, as we always say, because our motto is never again shall a veteran be forgotten. So write this down in your calendar. Sunday, September 10th from noon to 4 p.m. at VFW Post 423 on South Wagner Road in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Be there, and we'll see you then. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, we're going to be talking with Christina Darrow of Legal Help for Veterans, Michael Smith from the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office, and I think probably I've got somebody else on the line that's got a comment. My friend Bob Gould will be available, too. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this short message.
Shove to the left, shuffle to the right. Shuffle down the circle till your head feels light. Shuffle down the hall till you see the sign in your back where you started at the end of the line. Do the VA shuffle.
VA shuffle.
VA shuffle.
VA shuffle.
Takes a lot of patience for a veteran that's patient at the VA hospital.
All right, we are back on Veterans Radio. That bump music is from Michael J. Martin, of course. All the bumps today are going to be Michael J. Martin's music. So he had a kind of an insight into the VA system, and I think you'll find it kind of interesting when you listen to his music. All right, we're going to get started right away. Joining me on the line, first of all, is one of the partners of Legal Help for Veterans, and that is Christina Darrow. And Christina, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How are things?
Doing well. Looking forward to our conversation today.
All right. And joining me in the studio is Michael Smith from the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me here again, Dale.
All righty. And I might as well bring him on. Bob, bring Bob on the line right now, and my partner, Bob Gould. Bob, welcome back.
Thanks, Dale. And Mike, once again, welcome to Veterans Radio. You're a regular on the program. And I'm anxious to hear all that you have to say in regard to veterans' benefits. And I do have something to comment later on. I think Dale's going to give me a minute or two at the halfway point, but welcome. And Dale, thanks a lot. Oh, okay. By the way, I do want to welcome a new listener, a gentleman I met today, and he is tuning in. And we like hearing about new listeners, right?
Right, all the time. More listeners, the better.
All the time, right. This guy's a lawyer, so, you know, they're listening to Law and Order all the time. But anyway,
we got lawyers.
I'll be standing by. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to bring Christina on the line, because Christina's got some news. There have been a lot of things going on with the VA recently. And so, Christina, let's start off with, let's do the caregiver thing.
Well, actually, big news for that. I know a lot of your veteran listeners who might have involvement with the caregiver program is probably excited to hear about it. VA, several months ago, actually stopped funding and started removing thousands of caregivers from the program. And the program was originally started in 2011, so this way veterans who are disabled and required caregivers to take care of them, if those caregivers happened to be family members, they were able to be compensated because those caregivers obviously left their job to take care of the veterans full time. And so a couple months ago, VA had removed thousands of caregivers, and they took so much heat for it from Congress and from the general public that they actually suspended the program for a little while, and they've now reinstated it. But unfortunately, they've determined that there was significant problems with the way that VA communicated to the veterans and the caregivers as to why they were being removed from the program. So now the new program, they've got a couple directives that they've issued, and it's allowing the program to continue, but it's also going to have clearer eligibility requirements for both the veterans and the caregivers. So this way there won't be as much confusion over who actually qualifies. And there's also going to be a better procedure laid out for removing the people from the program. So this way the veterans and the caregivers aren't taken by surprise like they were a couple months ago.
Okay. Was there a question of fraud involved possibly?
Well, it is that, but also some of the veterans, truly the requirements weren't that clear about what you needed to have. Basically, a lot of the veterans just thought it was as long as you're getting, you know, care from a caregiver, they would have the VA come out, view the facility that they're at or view their home, kind of talk with the people. And it was, from my understanding of it, a little bit more of a holistic approach. And the VA kind of tightened their belts on that. And so a lot of the veterans, quite wrongly in some instances, were removed from the program. And so now with this change, I think it's kind of solidifying what's required to be part of it, but also what the steps are if you do get taken away from the program, what the steps are for appealing it, and hopefully, you know, being reinstated.
Okay. Michael, You're familiar with that, of course?
I am, and I'm glad that the VA has made a commitment again to those caregivers, because for some veterans and their families, the only sources of income that they have are the disability compensation that the veteran is receiving, and then the family member who volunteers to be their caregiver, the compensation that the VA pays that person. So it's very important that the VA make a solid commitment to these families and keep that commitment into mm-hmm. the future.
Okay. All right. Number two, Christina, is your question about, not question, it's the possible changes in the Agent Orange definition of what caused what?
Yes, it's actually very big news. The Vietnam era veterans should be pleased with it. Secretary Shulkin is actually considering either on or before November 1st to add potentially 5 new disabilities to the list that VA keeps as being presumptively associated with herbicides that were sprayed during the Vietnam War and also around the perimeter of bases in Thailand. And so those disabilities they're thinking about adding is bladder cancer, hyperthyroidism, hypertension, which is a really big one, stroke, and also Parkinson-like symptoms, but without a diagnosis of that disease. Because they already have Parkinson's disease on there, but as we're learning more about the disease, some individuals don't actually meet the criteria for a full-blown Parkinson's diagnosis, but yet they're still having Parkinson-like symptoms. So this would kind of qualify those veterans as well.
So this is going to be done by November 1st?
Correct. He has on or before, hopefully sooner rather than later. But what started it all was in March of 2016, actually, the Institute of Medicine issued their 10th and final review of all the medical literature on the health effects of herbicide exposure.
Okay.
And so the Secretary of VA at that time, Secretary McDonald, said he wanted to find out a little bit more about it. And so, you know, they did task force and working groups and things like that. And now all of that's completed, and that's why it's before Secretary Shulkin to be able to make that decision, because he has the authority to add all of them, some of them, or none of them. It's truly in his discretion.
Okay. Have you heard anything about that one?
Yes.
I mean, other than what she just said?
Yes, and I'm very happy that Secretary Shulkin has a commitment to adding to the list, and our hopes in the community is that he would add all 5. The reason being is hypertension. It's a really large one. That one was before the former VA Secretary, the Honorable Mr. Shinseki, and he actually rejected hypertension and adding it to the list under his discretion in the statute. So we're glad to see it back. The Institute of Medicine included it along with the other 4 conditions. As our other guest said, we deal with a lot of veterans in filing claims who have Parkinson's-like symptoms, but they don't have a full diagnosis of Parkinson's. And so it would be nice to see actually all of these added to the list.
Yeah.
I think it's overdue, and it would be wonderful to see Secretary Shulkin add all 5.
Okay. Well, hopefully you've heard it here, folks, here on Veterans Radio. The other thing, Christina, that we wanted to mention was what occurred this last week with the Congress actually passed a bill.
Correct, which is amazing in and of itself. So, I mean, I think we should give a shout-out to Congress for actually doing that. But they passed the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, and that just happened on Wednesday. President Trump signed it into law. And they're hoping that it will in some ways address the giant backlog of appeals that's currently okay. pending before VA. There's about, I think, last I heard, there's over 350,000 claims for benefits that were currently pending at VA.
Mm-hmm.
VA claims that about 12% of them are appealed. I feel like the number's higher, but we'll go with their number. And so about right now, there's 87,000 claims that have been waiting for a decision for longer than 125 days. VA has noted that it takes, on average, about 6 years to go from putting in a claim, you know, making an initial filing at the local regional office, and then appealing it all the way up to the Board of Veterans Appeals in Washington, D.C., and that's on average. You know, we have a lot of veterans that I'm sure are listening, our veteran clients that we have. It takes oftentimes much longer. It's a very long and protracted process. And so hopefully this will address some of those inadequacies. And there are also some talk about clarifying the notifications that are sent out to veterans. So VA is required, according to case law that was promulgated quite some time ago from the court, to give the veterans notifications about their claims. As an attorney, when I read them, I'm confused. So I can only imagine how veterans themselves
I've gotten a few of those letters.
Exactly. And they are just as clear as mud.
Yeah.
So this new act that was passed hopefully addresses some of that. It's supposed to basically explain in layman's terms, you know, what issues are on appeal, what evidence was considered to make the decision, you know, the applicable laws and regulations that were used in deciding, and then also if things were denied, the elements that weren't satisfied leading to denial. Because a lot of our veterans, you know, they'll get denied service connection for something, and it's very confusing to them because the healthcare arm of VA will treat the veteran, and then they go and apply for that very condition, and they get denied as being not related to service. And so it's very confusing because they don't understand how the one arm of VA will actually acknowledge and treat their disability, and the other arm is saying, no, it's not related to service. And so hopefully this notice requirement will make that a little bit clearer. But we obviously it'll be quite some time before it gets implemented, so we'll need to wait and see how it actually turns out.
Okay, this is part of the old, you know, the story, the rumor control of, you know, deny until they die. And unfortunately, Michael, I know you deal with this on a daily basis, as does Christina, so...
Yeah, we're very happy to see this. Actually, first vice president of the National Association of County Veteran Service Officers, Marty Caraway, along with our VSO partners, our Veteran Service Organization partners in Washington, D.C., began work on this early last year in 2016 and got some traction with then Secretary Bob McDonald, who agreed that there needed to be an overhaul. We were actually trained on the what the Modernization Act was going to entail, and then it languished in Congress. So we're very glad to see it be revised and revived, make its way through both the House and the Senate, to end up on the president's desk for signature, or not literally on his desk, but out in Reno, Nevada last week at the American Legion Conference. And we're very happy to see this because essentially it's going to create three lanes in which the appeal can travel. They're basically saying that each of those lanes will take about 1 year or less. So that very much shortens the time frame that people are looking at right now with appeals. So one lane is veterans or survivors can take their appeals directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals. The second lane would be that they could request a higher level VA adjudicator to decide the case at the regional office of jurisdiction, or they can appeal with new information to the same adjudicator who denied their claim. So these three lanes, now, mind you, if one lane upholds a denial, the veteran or claimant at any time can switch to any one of these other two lanes so that they always have the best bite at the apple for their appeal. As our guest already indicated, with the Administrative Procedures Act, now that the law has been signed into, the act has been signed into law, the administrative agency, in this case the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, will have to promulgate rules on implementation and get that information out to worker bees so that they know how they're going to begin to implement this law. And they're saying it's going to take about 18 months. We would hope that, given consideration of the Administrative Procedures Act, that it would be a shortened time frame so we can see this in place, working to the betterment of our veterans and their survivors.
All right. Christina, anything on that?
No, it will take quite some time. I'm just curious to see how it's actually going to be implemented. You know, it's great that they're saying that it's going to be about a year for each of the claim streams. I'm a little bit concerned, just from our point of view, that really the training needs to be there at VA to make sure it's going to be equal application for everybody. And also it makes me a little bit nervous when you can immediately appeal up to the Board of Veterans Appeals. You know, if you're going to get denied up there, you're automatically knocking out different people that you can talk to along the way, if you will, for lack of a better way of putting it. You know, if you get denied at the regional office, you can appeal and you can have a decision review officer look at it, and then finally it can go up to the board, and so you have a few more options to appeal. It obviously adds on time, but if it starts out kind of in a negative way or a negative mindset the way VA looks at it, usually by the time it gets up to the board, that can be corrected through evidence submission and pointing out of the correct regulations. I'm a little bit leery about how that will actually work out with it being just appealed directly up to the board. But, you know, I mean, that's something that we'll need to wait and see. And also, you know, I'm sure your other guest experiences it well every day in terms of having the veterans look at things and trying to prove their claims. You know, it is problematic for them in terms of evidence submission,
right,
and the amount of time that it takes. So it would be good to be able to have it, but yet again, when you don't have equal application, it doesn't turn out that favorably either. So.
And you also bring up another point. We're as concerned as you are, especially with the request to a higher level VA adjudicator or appeal to the same adjudicator who denied the claim, because right now with the way the VA is processing claims in what's called the National Work Queue, our claims at any five stages of the claim, from establishment and control to development to rating to award generation and promulgation, at any one of those five stages, the National Work Queue is like an iCloud. Mm-hmm. It moves the claim around to the regional office that has capacity at that stage of the claim. So it could start out with control and establishment in Waco, Texas. It can go to San Diego or Seattle for development. It could end up in Indianapolis or Pittsburgh or Philadelphia for rating. It could then go down to St. Pete for award generation and end up in Detroit for promulgation. So the question then comes, where which one of those regional offices, yeah, do we enter the second or third track of this appeals process? Because if that means that Detroit, for us here in Michigan, would be considered the regional office of jurisdiction, they were probably not even involved in the rating decision. Mm-hmm. So we are, you're right, the implementation is the key, and we're very, very curious and concerned about how that's going to happen.
Okay, I got to get to Bob. Bob, you still there?
Yes, I am, Dale.
Okay. You got a question, right?
Yeah, well.
Quick, I got four minutes.
My question had to do with having a choice card. And I guess, is this the moment, or are we going to go to halfway, or you want me to give out my little statement?
No, I'm going to ask Michael to explain what happened to your choice cards.
Oh, there we go. Well, all right, folks. Well, no. Oh, well, tell the producer to turn up the volume a bit. Got it. All right. So here we go. Yeah. The choice card, which I signed up for, was, 90 days? And they canceled it. Is that true, Mike?
Well, what happened is, just like the caregiver program, the VA ran out of money. So the choice program was funded for the entire fiscal year based on the budget that was approved last year by Congress and started on 1 October, but they ran out of money in the early part of the spring. And on August 2nd, 2017, Congress passed a bill, and they appropriated another $2.1 billion for funding of the Choice Program so that there should be no disruption in services and what's available for those who have Choice, want to use Choice as an option in their health care. The funding has now been appropriated.
Wow, that is, folks, that's huge.
That is huge.
Big time. Which I feel the VA healthcare system needs to go to a single payer card system. The Blue Cross Blue Shield has the doctors, they have the network, they have the fees have all been negotiated. 25 million vets, that's nothing. And I can't wait for that to happen. Now, are we free? And I'll make this because there's a lot of veterans out there that'll benefit from this. When you have the choice card, do you still need a referral?
Well, that's true. The requirements of the choice program are still going to be in place, and that's that old 40-30 rule, meaning if you're with you're outside of the 40-mile radius of a facility and the appointment that the VA has available for you is outside of 30 days, then the first thing they're going to do is offer you the choice of getting your care out on the economy. So it's not so much a referral. It's the VA making an assessment of those veterans who are outside of the 40-mile radius and knowing from their own scheduling that they're not going to be able to get them in to see a caregiver within 30 days. They're automatically given to the choice program so that they can be contacted and asked if they, in fact, want to come into the VA or go out on the economy.
Okay. Good job, Mike. Absolutely. Okay.
We've got a minute to go, Bob.
Okay. Thank you very much for clarifying that. And I'm going to sign off now.
Okay.
We'll talk there in a week. Thank you, everybody. Thanks again, Mike.
Good to hear from you, Bob.
All right. Take care.
All righty. All right. Well, we probably didn't answer all the questions. I want to make sure people stick around because Dr. Michael Mann is going to be coming on. And he's going to be talking about some of the problems that are going on with the VA health system. Remember, the VA is not just a health system. It's all these other things we talked about. Comes the band. I want to thank Christina Darrow for being on our program. We'll have you back again, Christina. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Michael, I want you to stick around, and we'll be back in just a moment. I think we're probably counting down now. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be back after the news. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and joining me on the line right now is Dr. Michael Mann. And let me give you a little background on this guy. He is amazing. He is a professor of surgery and director of cardiothoracic translational research lab at the University of California, San Francisco. He has worked at the VA for many, many years, and also in civilian life. And he's going to be talking about the dysfunction of the Department of Veterans Affairs. He's recently released a new book entitled Mission Betrayed. Dr. Mann, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Dale. It's really a pleasure to have this opportunity to speak to you and the many veterans listening to your program.
Well, thank you very much. So tell me about, what is your main concern about the VA right now?
Exactly. That really is the question of the moment. And unfortunately, the answer is in some ways as simple as it is shocking and in some ways frightening. The bottom line is that all of the terrible things that we've learned about the VA over the past few years, dating back to the 2014 waitlist scandals, all the way up to the dozens of stories that have come out in local and national press about local VA failings in recent months and years, really, unfortunately, are not aberrations on what is otherwise a sound system that provides, as many have been led to believe, excellent health care. But unfortunately, just the opposite is true. They are really simply manifestations, reflections of a system in deep crisis, of a system that really fails at its core to fulfill the mission for which it was originally intended.
Well, that's to the point.
Unfortunately.
It is.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was talking earlier with Michael Smith, who's still in the studio with us, about, you know, my care at the VA hospitals has always been good. I've never had a problem with appointments. And, of course, I've never really had a serious condition either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I have received, because of the title of this program, we did receive quite a few emails and people that talked about issues that they have had, not only with appointments but with care, poor care, not actually receiving the care they were supposed to receive. What has been your experience? And I know in your bio that you had worked at the VA. How long were you there?
Actually, my exposure to the VA spanned the course of about 20 years. Okay. As with many doctors, the majority of doctors, in fact, in the United States, I had a heavy exposure to the VA during medical school and my surgical training. In some ways, I was fortunate to get exposed to three of what are considered the best VA facilities in the entire system, Palo Alto, West Roxbury, mm-hmm. which is in the Harvard system in Boston, and now, of course, at the San Francisco VA, where for about 8 years, I'm no longer there now, but for about 8 years between 2003 and 2011, I was asked to lead a surgical specialty program there that provided basically lung cancer treatment to veterans. So you can imagine how important that service
yes.
is. So my expose and my mission now, the message that I'm trying to get out, is unfortunately really, really just an expression of what many, many people know to be true about the VA, but it's a reality that is kept underneath the surface. And as we move forward through a political process of trying to make the VA a better place, trying to make the VA a place that meets every veteran's needs, and I certainly appreciate and understand that, you know, you as a veteran have had a good experience, and there are many wonderful people who work at VAs across the country mm-hmm. who do provide outstanding care to their patients. Unfortunately, they're all being undermined by a relentless institutional inertia and a really institutional indifference that prevents them from really trying to reach for that outstanding care that I think everybody assumes the VA was intended to provide. And I think you can boil the problem down to sort of three elements. One is that the VA evolved on a historical tradition of mediocrity, and there persists to today, and I think this is a shock to many people, especially folks like yourself, mm-hmm. who haven't been exposed to the direct failing of the VA as a healthcare system. But there really does persist to today a pervasive attitude that the VA was designed as a second-rate healthcare system to take care of a group of second-class citizens. And that is, you know, an awful thing to have to acknowledge, but it really is a pervasive, not individual attitude on the part of the practitioners, but an institutional attitude. And therefore, the assumption that many practitioners have to live with is that there are just certain limits to what they're able to provide at the VA. There are certain barriers that they will probably never overcome in trying to deliver the same level of excellence to their VA patients that they demand of themselves and their institutions when they're working outside the VA.
Oh.
And so, yeah, I know it.
No,
this is why I think it's so important. That's right.
Yes. No, we're talking with Dr. Michael Mann, who's just released a new book entitled Mission Betrayed, talking about, you know, the VA system and it's, I guess it's design. And I was kind of shocked by that when I heard that, because I know that many of the VA systems, the doctors have two lives. And it sounds like you did too, because my main primary specialist, anyway, is at the VA, and then she is also at the University of Michigan. And,
yes,
you know,
very typical.
Yes, and so we always feel like we're getting really great care because we have these, you know, well-known doctors and so forth that are coming in and out of the system. But I'm getting blanking out here. The question is, mm-hmm. are there certain diseases, let's say, that they will not pursue total treatment on, or certain conditions that they won't treat?
The problem, Dale, is that medicine is not something that can be practiced by an individual in a vacuum. And you're absolutely mm-hmm. right. The Association of VAs with outstanding medical schools and other academic institutions does provide the veterans access to some of the greatest minds in American medicine. There's no doubt about that. And even some of the full-time VA staff are incredibly dedicated individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the problem is that they do lead double lives. I think the phrase that you used is incredibly appropriate for this situation, because myself included, and I was ashamed, really, when finally I had to admit to myself that this is true. When we walk in a VA facility, we very often accept a double standard compared to what we demand of ourselves and our practice at other places. And so it's not that there are, as you're saying, certain diseases or certain treatments even that the VA withholds from patients or that practitioners are not able or willing to access for VA patients. The problem is that it's a system that delivers health care and never an individual. For example, when I was performing heart surgery on veterans in San Francisco, it could take weeks or months to get any individual patient off of our waiting list and into the operating room. And those would be weeks to months of waiting for perioperative care, for preoperative testing, for treatment algorithms to be initiated that would enable them to safely get into the operating room. And the incredible irony was that while we had an immense waiting list of veterans in San Francisco literally dying for heart surgery, we struggled on a week-to-week basis to fill just four slots in the operating room. We struggled to get just four patients into the operating room on a weekly basis, and it was entirely because the system made it so difficult to move patients through from diagnosis to treatment.
I've heard stories about that from friends of mine who had to wait. You know, they were diagnosed with a serious problem, and they ended up having to wait weeks before they could get in. And then when they got in, they said, "I was the only one in there." And I know I'm not the only one that has, you know, this particular disease or this particular problem. Is it? You'd say that it's systemic. Is it because of the just the bureaucracy of the whole place, or is it because of the lack of? Is it because of the money? Which Michael
it's
just gave me the symbol
of
money.
Of the money. Yeah, I doubt it's because of the money. There's an immense budget dedicated to the VA, and a lot of that is earmarked toward veteran care, and very often it's underspent. There's an attitude, again, and I'm not indicting individuals necessarily, but there's an institutional laziness that dictates that only a certain amount of work is going to get done on any given day, any given week. An operating room is only going to be made accessible for a certain number of hours on any given day, and it's going to be shut down. And this is the VA way, and this is, again, a tradition, a bureaucratic reality that people can knock their heads against, and I certainly did for many years. But eventually you're beaten back into a realization that, quote unquote, this is the VA and this is the way things are and they will not change. And the unfortunate consequence is that there's veteran neglect because standards are lower. There are performance issues that happen way too frequently, and that can result in actual veteran abuse and in the worst instances, veteran death. And veterans die sometimes because of bad care, but sometimes they just die just because the care was not there at the right time.
We're just looking at a document from the VA that's talking about the declining VA population of veterans. You know, and over the next 20 years, it's going to go from where'd my numbers go? Somewhere around 20 million down to 13 million over the next 20 years, and probably even smaller. And so, Michael, I want you to feel free to jump in on Michael Smith, to Dr. Michael Mann, is the VA outlived its usefulness? I guess that's a question, you know, the direction that we're going. Is it time to say, okay, you know, it's run its course. Let's give these guys a card and they can go wherever they need to go.
Well, I'm certainly happy to jump in. I love to hear other experts to address this fundamental question. What to me is so ironic is that I believe that very question was really in at the forefront of people's minds a good 10 to 20 years ago, before all the very unfortunate political developments that have put our troops in the front line way too often during the past 20 years and continues to do so, so that there's almost, in my experience, been a resurgence of a feeling of a need for for veteran health care to be, you know, well understood and well provided. Again, ironically, I think in the 1980s in particular, when the conditions at VA hospitals were visibly worse than they are today. So at a time when nobody seemed to care what the conditions were at VA hospitals, Congress finally shook off its inertia and passed legislation that demanded accountability of the VA. And interestingly, some of the initial legislation in that period demanded first that the VA give an accounting of how well it was doing, quote-unquote, compared to the national standard, the prevailing national standard. And unfortunately, there were very few ways of measuring a national standard of health care in those days. And so in the end, the VA was asked to provide an accounting for its own surgical mortality statistics, how well people survived after surgery at the VA compared to the nation. And although very well-intentioned, that was, in my mind, the beginning of a very dangerous period for veterans in this country, because it taught the VA how to gather statistics in such a way that painted a picture of outstanding care when, in fact, it was just a statistical facade. Mm-hmm. And so today we are really living the very ill effects of the legacy of this now worship of very misleading and at times intentionally deceptive statistical overlays that are really hiding a much more sobering and very unflattering picture of care underneath. So I would have said, you know, 20 years ago that would have been an interesting debate. You know, do we really need to be propping up this failing system if the veteran population is in fact going to wane? I see so many young people now coming through military service and availing themselves of the VA that clearly there is a mission that this country has to fulfill. We do need to make sure that these young men and women do have the health care that they deserve for the remainder of their lifetimes, and that we're serving them and their families. But whether it needs to be in an independent, parallel health care system, I think if we're willing to admit how recent disappointments reflect a fundamental failing of the VA, one of the questions on the table has to be whether this type of failing system is still 20 years later one that we need to continue to prop up on still.
Dr. Mann, this is Michael Smith. I'm the director of Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs here in Ann Arbor, where our VA Ann Arbor healthcare system is considered one of the best in the nation comparably. And I want to say that your book is rather timely, coming on the heels of the Commission on CARES report that, if you remember, they were tasked at the end of 2014 and over 2015 and 2016, they did a very extensive audit, if you would say, of the VA healthcare system. They had an independent reviewer do it as well, and both the independent reviewer as well as the Commission on CARES findings were very, very similar, and their recommendations were very similar. And they released their report last July in 2016, and one of the things that they found was that it was a failing healthcare system. It was pretty much underutilized by veterans and almost inaccessible to veterans, and that the leadership of the VA, especially in the Veterans Integrated Service Networks, the VISNs, as well as the other top leaders in most of the hospitals, were vacant or being filled by acting directors. So there was really no good, clear leadership. The other thing they recommended was that, yes, we do transfer and keep our commitment, to veterans' health care, but transfer it to the private economy by expanding the CHOICE program and over a period of 20 years engaging in a facility closure somewhat akin to the base closures that we saw in the military, first starting out with underutilized or not even being used facilities, and then kind of having a schedule of closure as opposed to spending tons and tons of taxpayer dollars to support the existing capital or building new capital to meet the needs of our veterans in terms of health care. They made a lot of sense, and I'm a veteran who gets my health care at the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, but the Commission on CARE and your findings are very similar. And I don't know as how people can continue to ignore the facts as we see them.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head. Again, very unfortunately, I really wish we did not need to engage in this discussion. But that last observation of yours, I think, is really among the most critical right now, which is that we're being led down a primrose path, and that unfortunately, veteran care is a political issue as well as just an ethical imperative for us as a nation. Mm-hmm. And so the political winds are really dictating the way the fate of the VA is going to be played out. And again, ironic, there's so many ironies here. Ironically, the VA is the one issue that across all partisan lines, everybody is in consensus. We need to help our veterans. This country has immense love and immense gratitude for our veterans. So everybody is in theory on the same side of this issue, that we need to do the best that we can for our veterans. But unfortunately, we're up against one of the absolute biggest, most entrenched programs, organizations within our federal bureaucracy. This is not something to be taken lightly. And it's a bureaucracy that has evolved over the past 50 to 75 years primarily to perpetuate its own existence and its own status quo, unfortunately, often at the expense of the very veterans it was designed and intended to promote and to protect and preserve. And that is really the fundamental failing of the institution. And for that reason, real reform is going to require upheaval. I really don't know how we can possibly fix the VA when the attitudes are so pervasive and the bureaucracy is so entrenched. So if we're willing, you know, we could shake the tree at its trunk, if not at its roots, and really try to start again to build a healthcare system dedicated to the pursuit of excellent care for veterans. Unfortunately, that's not what we've got today.
Well, we're hoping that will happen again at some point. Dr. Mann, we're coming up against the clock here. I want to thank you very much for being on the program, and hopefully once I finish reading your book, when we read your book, I'd like to have you back on toward the end of September if we could do that.
I'd be extremely happy to be back and talk to you some more, Dale. This is an issue that we're either going to force the country to address head on, or we're going to be standing in national shame for a long, long time.
Absolutely. I thank you for taking the first step, and we'll do what we can to help you out.
Great. Thank you so much, Dale. Very much appreciated. You're doing a great service, and I really congratulate you for giving a forum to these types of issues for our vets.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Mann. From one veteran to a person who's got our interests at heart, I really appreciate your efforts and the book you published.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And I'm, if not a veteran myself, I'm the son of a veteran. So as with most Americans, you guys are near and dear to our hearts. And don't forget that. We don't say it often enough, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great.
All right. Well, that was interesting, and I think it's something that we need to continue. So what I'm thinking about doing is that I want to do a monthly program that talks about the VA and, you know, where it is and where it's going. So, Michael, hopefully you'll come back.
We
can talk about some of the statistics. I know you have them for everything, and we greatly appreciate it. There are a couple of real quick things that are coming up. I forgot to mention that's on September 18th. There's a Veterans Benefits, Helping Our Veterans, Veteran Benefits and Services available at Washtenaw Community College Monday night, September 18th from 5:30 to 7:30. Make sure you're there. If you're out in the Saline Fair area coming up over Labor Day weekend, they're having a Heroes Welcome on Saturday from
11 to 1.
11 to 1. And they're going to honor all their veterans that are at the Saline Fair. So
they can get in free, and they have free admittance to the Saline Community Fair on Saturday. And then from 11 to 1, there will be a program to honor our heroes.
There we go. All right. So we're going to go out on a Michael J. Martin tune. Make sure that you tune in next week. This program will be up in our archives in a little while, and you can hear more about it. We will have Dr. Mann back on at the end of September. That's our plan right now. So thank you for listening. Until then, you are dismissed.
gonna fight the fight when the last warrior is gone. And who's gonna keep the pride? Who's gonna sing the war song? Who's gonna stand in the face of the slight? Who's gonna right all the wrongs? Who's gonna fight the fight when the last warrior is gone? Gonna hang tough when it's down to the skin and the bones. And who's gonna call their bluff? Who's gonna take them all?